Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for our second program of Purple House, a monthly forum for the arts. We have the pleasure of having Ross Goldstein and Brian Duan in the studio. Both are multi-talented musicians and artists extraordinaire, and we're here to... Actually, I should just say, this is sort of a little beginning introduction to Ross's new album. We're going to invite him to come back in the spring when the release happens. So this is kind of a preview moment. Right, Ross?
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So we're delighted to have both of you
thank
in here.
Thank you. Yeah.
The album is called Inverted Jenny. And I think we're actually, I want to pause for a moment because we're going to do something special. I'm going to ask Brian to recite a poem called State Bird, which he read at the 394 poetry reading. And it was so fantastic. I was... just excited about having him read it here for us. So let's do that first. Brian, please.
All right. I'm up before the lazy sun. I'm better than the sun. But by noon it avenges my blasphemy and melts me like ice cream. Should have stayed in bed, listening to the radio, boasting all morning about all the announcers it owns. Maybe they ought to get together. The sun and the radio. One can slander its enemies. The other can melt things. Things looked grim until the state bird reminded me that the radio is just a magpie and the sun is just one of billions.
Bravo. Thank you, Brian. All right. So I'd like to start off with a quote from Thoreau's journal, June 25, 1852, in which he wrote, "The music is not in the tune, it is in the sound." And based on a previous conversation with Ross, I wanted Ross to try and address the whole idea of why is music so powerful, so potentially transformative?
I think it reaches us somewhere, you know, inside and is... a nourishing thing, you know, and so it's healthy, therefore, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how that, you know,
well, you
all
know,
started, but
yeah,
why the perfect fifth, or you know, but there it is, the phenomenology of sound, vibrations.
Yeah, it seems to
everything
it seems
vibrating.
To join us not only intellectually but physically and emotionally all at once. I mean, it just has this capacity to lift us out or into something, or I don't even know how to describe it, but it's so amazing that sound does that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it certainly helped me, you know, throughout my whole life in terms of, well, I don't know, I can't say much more about it other than that.
Okay. So let's talk about the album specifically. Where did you record it? And tell us about the title, please.
The title is actually the name of a rare stamp. So that's where the title comes from.
Mm-hmm.
The album was recorded mostly in Kingston, and some of it was done here in Catskill at Old Soul Studio. It was a wonderful studio.
Kenny's,
just over Kenny's place. And actually, that's where Brian played a number of instruments and overdubbed some truly wonderful parts.
So do I understand that you kind of put each song together and then invited Brian in on it? Is that the sequence?
Yes, but Brian came in around halfway through, though, so it's not like, you know, work, he transformed some of the pieces, and then, you know, a work had to be done afterwards in relation to what he had
to what
put
he
down.
Contributed. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so we're going to pause and listen to track number four. Do we have a title?
This song is an instrumental, and it's called Disco Donut.
Disco Donut.
Thank you.
That was sweet. Okay. Let's talk about who did what. So, beginning of the song, Ross.
Well, Brian played, was it a Hammond B3 on that?
Yeah.
Over at Kenny's place, Old Soul.
Uh-huh.
Otto Hauser, a brilliant drummer who lives in Hudson, played the drums. And I guess I'm playing everything else.
Mm-hmm.
That song was based on a pre-set pattern that was in a this big sort of baby grand white piano that had beats and chords.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of was jamming on that and then started to layer things on top and eventually removed the white piano, and what was left eventually became the song.
It's almost like erased drawings in a way or something.
Yeah.
So Brian's a layer, a significant layer.
Oh, yeah.
So, Brian, you were presented with the raw material.
And then, oh, yeah.
So how did you move towards adding your layer? What was the process for you?
Well, first I heard the whole album, which wasn't yet completed, but was already, you know, the songs were there and already laid out in the character of the song. So, like, for me, it was a response to the songs, which were already written. And Ross was sometimes recomposing things, you know, or adding some things, subtracting other things. So
there was a back and forthness in this process?
Yeah, some back and forth, but it all started with this point of departure. So it was fun for me to take, you know, what already existed, you know, as a song, even if it didn't have all of its details in yet. So I added some things, and Ross has been responding to it, you know, deciding, putting in things and removing other things. So sometimes that's an exciting part of the whole thing is. And it started out also very kind of austere in a certain way. And I think it still, like, is a characteristic of the finished album, is that it's very, very spacious.
Thank you,
strangely peaceful.
So
I like that it's a mixture of being spare in its orchestration, and at the same time there are so many different sounds that that come out of the woodwork. So it's very populated with sounds of different characters, and yet there's lots of room and lots of silences and breathing in it, which was what I was excited about to begin with when I heard his original recordings that were already laid out.
Is it fair to say to both of you that at that point in creating the final song and LP, is it an intuitively led process?
Yeah, entirely so.
I agree.
Yeah, and for me too, you know, it was very much responding to something that already exists and what that makes you want to do or to refrain from doing.
So, Ross, when you started, is this what you would call a concept album? Did you have some kind of... No framework at all. You just...
Well,
individual songs?
A framework, but a concept album is a sort of a thing, you know.
Yeah. So each song was an individual composition.
Yeah, I think they form an album as a whole. But, one song at a time. Just, you know, as its own idea. You know, each song is its own idea. Yeah, it has to be seen through that way.
We're speaking with Ross Goldstein and Brian Dewan in regards to Ross's new LP called Inverted Jenny, which I've just learned is actually due out in July. So we'll have another opportunity.
At least the vinyl copy. Some music online before then.
Great. So we had begun a conversation about the process of constructing the album. I'm interested in Ross and how you actually make a song. And I realize that this could change. Every song could be different. But is there a general way that you look back and you realize, oh, I'm a songwriter that starts off with a melody or an instrument or in response to something that you heard? Where's the beginning of this?
Well, sometimes it can actually be the duration, how long you want the thing to be. And in some cases, that's what occurred with this record. But most often it's chord changes. And then the melody
kind of
comes out later.
You're starting on a guitar.
Or a piano or a keyboard. Sometimes it will start with a particular rhythm. But, you know, because it's intuitive, it just kind of goes from there. And it's just an instinctual thing.
Do you have I know as a painter in the studio, sometimes, you know, you take things away, and then there's the aha moment when it seems to settle. And you're like, okay, this is going to stay, and everything on top of this builds, and it works. Is that true for you?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm really not sure.
So I've been listening the last couple of days to Freedom.
Oh, right. That's a record I made.
Yes.
Well, the actual title of that record is Trail Songs.
Okay.
But I did put the words freedom on the cover.
On the cover, that's right. Yeah, it's a fantastic LP.
It was made pretty much around the time that we invaded Iraq, and there was some talk of us spreading freedom. And it was sort of a bit of a response to that, I guess you could say, at the time.
So as a musician and artist, you completed this other album, which I would call a very successful album. Did you have a notion to build on it, or did you want to totally separate yourself from it and do something completely different? What's the inner workings for you? How's that happen?
I do like to move on and try other things, and I'm not usually one who writes songs. I like to make experimental music or electronic music, different kind of sound collage, I guess you could say.
How many songs on the album are just instrumental?
Let's see. I think there are four or five, so close to half the record. And that was, it didn't start out that way, but it sort of started to feel that way, you know, closer.
So when you worked with Brian, did you just say, Brian, here, respond? And, you know, like,
Yeah, I completely trusted Brian to explore the tracks, and I was very fortunate to have him, in that role.
How was that for you, Brian?
Oh, it was great. It was so much fun. And so we had been, you know, also just hanging out a lot and getting a sense of things. And so, I was very enamored of the record when I first heard it before I was doing anything on it.
Right.
So, you know, I just added some parts that were, you know, I felt like were suggested to me by the already the character of this song. Also interesting, too, because when you were asking about it being a concept record, you know, I think of it as being a cohesive album, but it defies a concept that you can spell out in words. So I like that it's more of an elusive thing what unifies the songs, and yet there is this thread throughout them.
And there's a strong graphic component to this. Ripley is...
Yeah, she did some brilliant artwork for the packaging, the cover, and the back, the titles. And my friend Gary did the inside artwork, and he's a brilliant artist. So, yeah, I'm fortunate to have some very talented artists involved in helping to make the packaging.
The manifestation.
Which I think is as important as the music. It's not secondary.
So, in terms of local folks, whose work do you admire? Artists, musicians?
Many people.
Who's
many
an inspiration
people.
For you?
Many people. I mean, I wouldn't want to make a list.
Okay, we'll avoid the list. Anybody else in a bigger sort of way that people might know about in terms of...
I would have to give the same answer. There's too many, couldn't shrink it down
That's fair.
Five or ten.
Yeah, that's good. So what's next? So you're going to spend the next few months...
You tell me.
Well, actually, Tom and Alicia are next, literally, but I was thinking about what's next for you. You're going to spend the next few months...
Well, completing, making sure that the printing and whatnot comes out, you know, correctly, and I actually I'm working on newer recordings, so try to keep busy with the work, and you know that's what I'm working on.
From our previous conversation, I know that you have strong feelings about performing work. Are you planning on doing a version of a live performance of the LP?
Yes.
You're going to put together a band, 6 to 8 people.
That's unknown at this point, but somehow there I will. Perform some of these songs live and other music.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Well, I look forward to that, and I hope we can have you back in the studio in near July.
Thank you for inviting me on to talk about
this. It's great
to
have it.
Invite Brian.
Yes, thank you, Brian.
Oh, a pleasure.
So we're going to end this portion of the show with hearing another track, track number two. Do we have a title?
This song is called Green State.
Green State. All right.
And yeah, Brian did play on it as well.
Thank you, Ross Goldstein and Brian Dwan.
Drifting on the open road. It's good to be feeling lonely on the open road. The sign it read exit zero. Lost in a green state.